The San Jose Sharks Audio Network is on 24 hours a day. Whether you're in the office or on the go, make sure that you download the Sharks SAP Center app and hit listen anytime. You can also find us on your computer by going to sjsharks.com/listen. If it's a game broadcast, breaking news, or a player feature, the place to find it is right here on the San Jose Sharks Audio Network. Welcome to the Stanley Cup Playoff Report. Here are Dan Rusinowski and Drew Remenda.
It's episode number 7 of the Stanley Cup Playoff Report on the Sharks Audio Network. And Drew Remenda, we've got quite a game coming up as we record this show. Winnipeg and Dallas, what a series.
It has been a very good series. Two outstanding teams. The balance on these teams is amazing. Mikko Rantanen has been, well, he leads the NHL playoffs in points. He has been the big dog that we always knew he was. The interesting challenge for the Winnipeg Jets has been road play. They have not been very good on the road. And this is a huge, obviously huge, huge game with Dallas leading the series 2-1.
Kind of interesting to hear Pete DeBoer's perspective on how the acquisition of Mikko Rantanen has gone, obviously very well, but how much it's changed the identity of the Dallas Stars from what they were before he arrived.
It's a good question. It definitely changes things. You know, when you have a guy like that, a star player, it changes a little bit of the identity of your team. You know, I think we've been built around four lines and kind of waves of pressure and work, you know, probably liken it more to like a Carolina type identity. I think when you add a player like that, you have to take on a little bit of a different identity. You have to coach your team a little bit differently. You know, you have to get them out there more. You know, I think that's the challenge, is to integrate him and build around that without losing, you know, what's made us successful here. And I think it took a while, you know. I think there were some bumps there trying to find that line, but I think we understand that now.
Coach DeBoer also talked about how coaching changes in the playoffs because of the urgency of what's going on.
Yeah, you've got to get it fixed quickly. Like, yeah. You've got, you know, we've got less, we had, between game 2 and 3, we had, you know, we didn't have a practice. You know, we traveled and played in the afternoon. So, you know, yeah, you don't have time to sugarcoat and things like that. You want to cut to the meat of it and get it fixed. And sometimes, you know, those aren't pleasant conversations, but. You know, our group's been great with that.
Well, it's the leadership of that team, and DeBoer also talked about that as he discussed the changes that he has made from game to game.
It's impossible not to move your team forward without constructive criticism. And, you know, as a coach, you have to get a feel for your group. You know, is how hard can that constructive criticism be, and how honest and how forthright can you be with the group? And obviously the more honest and forthright you can be with your group, the quicker you can get it fixed, and you're not wasting time, you know, soft pedaling around it. And, you know, some groups can't handle that or don't handle that well. You know, our group does, and that's a testament to the leadership.
Don't you think, Drew, that Pete DeBoer just gave an excellent exposition of how much coaching is a people business?
100%. I've said this to you. I've said this to many, many people. One of my biggest regrets in my career with the San Jose Sharks is I wasn't around when Pete DeBoer was there to really get around him and understand how insightful, how smart, how much of an artist he is as a coach. I think he's absolutely brilliant. I think he is one of the best coaches in the National Hockey League. He's proved it team after team that he's taken to the playoffs time and time again. Guys have career years over them, but that is a great explanation of how you have to be able to understand your people, work with your people, and work to their strengths, but also have those, as he said, forthright conversations.
Well, it was a great game number four at American Airlines Center, and Dallas got off to a great start with the finish line. Roope Hintz knocking it in.
5-on-3 for the attack zone draw. They control it. Here is Harley. Sends it down. Niederreiter is out of the box. Now a 5-on-4. Right wing side. Stars. Hintz with a tip. Score! Roope Hintz, the tip from between the dots. The Stars take advantage of the early penalties. Less than 2.5 in, they've opened the scoring in game three.
That was quite a goal, and of course, that line combination, all three Finns on the roster. Mikael Granlund is part of that, and you know, everybody's talking about Hintz and Rantanen, but I think Granlund's been just so solid for this team.
He really has. When you watch Mikko and Cody Ceci as well, former Sharks, They very well and fit in perfectly. We know that Granlund was going to be good because he is a guy who is dedicated to doing the right things, game in, game out. He's very, very useful for Pete DeBoer, especially on the penalty kill, face-off situations. He can roll in there as well, that he switches back and forth. So when you look at that line, and it was funny, after they beat Colorado, I sent a note to Daryl Ray, a text to Daryl Ray. I love Daryl. He's great, one of the great broadcasters in the game today. I said, what a game. Way to go. Congratulations. He just came back with Finns. !
Well, he's right. There's no doubt about that. Yep. And of course, Rantanen's the guy that you know, it's getting all of the attention. But I just think that we do have to draw attention to those other two guys on the team. And there's another Finn that's part of this team that hasn't been there yet. That, of course, is Miro Heiskanen. And they keep saying that they think he's going to be back before this round is over. But if Dallas can win the series in game five, well, that's going to change the whole percentage for that. And yet that's another guy that they've been able to be successful in spite of not having him available.
I was listening to Pete DeBoer before the series started. Before the last game, talking about Miro being out. And, you know, Heiskanen is not only a good defenseman, he's one of the best defensemen in the National Hockey League. And not just a guy who scores or a guy who defends, but he's a guy who does everything, especially, and Pete DeBoer brought this up, and I thought it was a really good point, about controlling the puck. He controls the puck a ton. He moves the puck efficiently. He gets it up the ice. He's able to control it in the offensive zone. He's a guy that controls the game, and they've been missing that, and yet they're still winning.
Talk about control on that power play goal by Roope Hintz. Scott Arneil, the head coach of the Winnipeg Jets, was none too happy about the way that his team was dealing with zone entries. And he says that it's a cat and mouse game between his penalty killers and the Dallas power players, and also on the other side of the special teams.
Well, I'm not going to really tell you our adjustments, but they certainly did a good job with our number one unit, kind of slowing us up, not getting us in, not allowing us in with possession. I thought our second unit did a real good job of getting in. So look at some things, nothing we haven't seen before from different oppositions. It's like you mentioned, it's that the adjustments they have to make. You know, we have to look to get set up. Those guys, obviously, we know what they can do once they're in zone. We got to make sure that those entries, you know, that we're doing a better job. But it also starts on faceoffs, you know, that there's a 50-50 pucks that happen that not allowing Dallas to get those clears. That's an area also where we're usually pretty good, that on the 50-50s we either come up with it or we create a battle where our numbers get over top of their numbers. So start there and then be a little bit cleaner on how we enter.
Interesting thoughts from Scott Arneil, who's done a magnificent job with his team.
Well, the one thing that we talked about before, Danny, and it's constantly talked about, and Pete DeBoer's already mentioned it, is the adjustments that coaches have to make from game to game. During a season, 82 games, travel, not a lot of practice time, all kinds of things going on. You don't get a lot of adjustments from game to game because coaches focus and work on their own team and how they're playing and trying to get them to be as perfect at their craft and at their identity and at playing the same way game after game. In the playoffs, you do make those adjustments from game to game. I can remember doing all the video that we did when I was assistant coach. We worked and worked and worked on different adjustments game in, game out. And that's just part of coaching in the playoffs. You get more concerned and focused on the other team and what they're doing and how to beat them on that.
Well, here we go, because in this particular game, there were a lot of ebbs and flows and a lot of responses and a lot of adjustments. Of course, Winnipeg would come back and tie the game in this particular contest with Kyle Connor, one of the best skaters in the NHL, coming up huge.
And Scheifele will win it. Turning of the faceoff dot as Velarde scraped it away, shot the puck, cut it back again, threw it toward the net, stopped by Hunter, wrap around, they score! Kyle Connor darted back in behind the net after two shots from Velarde were stopped by Jake Ottinger. He couldn't corral the rebound on the second one, and then the wraparound jam job by Connor, his team leading fifth of the postseason, and Winnipeg has tied it at one.
That's 1-1. That's the first response by Winnipeg, but with Miro Heiskanen out, Thomas Harley has really risen his level of play, and he scored a beauty.
The Jets toss into drive. Here's Neil Pionk. Walks it to center. Then chip ahead off the blocker of Ottinger to the right wing corner. Dallas with an angled clearing attempt, kept in by the forward Niederreiter up at the blue line. Stolen by Harley. Sam Steele accelerates. Nice cut down by Granlin out of midair. Ben is back on. Stars threw another one. Mikhail Granlin, he gets tripped in a penalty. Winnipeg, Stars still on the attack. Harley, he scores! Thomas Harley says, forget the power play. We'll take the lead instead. 2-1. Dallas back in front.
That was a great play. And of course, as you heard, the penalty had just expired. Another penalty was coming up to Winnipeg on the play. And that just shows the way that Dallas pushed.
Yeah, Dallas, as Pete talked about, they're a very balanced team, but now they've got a little extra star power. What you see with Dallas, once they find the opening, once they get on the attack and they start overwhelming, which they do because there's just no break from line to line, they start to push and push teams back and push teams into defending. And when you're always defending against a team as good as Dallas, things get tough.
Well, Alex Petrovic would come up after Nito Niederreiter tied the game following that goal by Harley and scored one of the more controversial goals of the playoffs, at least to some.
The faceoff is at neutral territory, just outside the Dallas blue line in front of their bench, and it's controlled by Winnipeg. Pionk, a soft touch behind the net, and then cleared up around. Pionk slapped it low, and Iofalo and Petrovic both there. Stars had it, then lost it, and tie up and cancel, and Robertson's able to give an exit valve to Sam Steele. Steele across the blue line. Now right wing side, Petrovic set it up. Rantanen, save made. Rebound, pinballs it in! Petrovic put it towards the net. It pinballed its way into the net. Another crazy hop in this postseason. And it's going to be Petrovic who gives Dallas the lead.
Well, whether you pronounce his name Petrovic, as Josh Bogorad did, or Petrovic, as the Florida Panthers announcers used to pronounce it, he was really the lightning rod of this particular game, because he did direct the puck forward with his skate. And so the question is, was that a legal goal? And there was a lengthy, lengthy 6-minute long review before they finally, in my opinion, correctly called it a goal.
I agree with you that it was correct in the call and the goal. The questions are distinct kicking motion. The other question was, did it go off of any player after the distinct kicking motion besides the goaltender? That didn't look like it was it. But then if the ruling was, according to the National Hockey League, is that they believed that when it got to Connor Hellebuck, when he went to knock it away with his stick, he ended up, as they said, propelling the puck into the net. So that's why it counted. Danny, listen, the Situation Room has a very complicated job. And even though fans complain and coaches complain and broadcasters complain, when it comes to goals, they're just trying to get the call right. And they have no agenda besides trying to get the call right. But I do have an issue with how long that took. I think, and this is just a philosophical thought, that there should be time limits. If it takes you over 6 minutes to make the decision, if it takes you over 90 seconds, 2 minutes to make that decision, then whatever the call is on the ice should stand. But the general managers and the league want to, again, get the call right. That's what they've been saying. But for as long as that took, it takes away from the game. I think you should have 60 seconds to make the decision, the call, and then 90 seconds to decide whether it's a goal or not, according to the rules. And if you can't make up your mind in that time, I think it should, whatever the call is on the ice, should stand.
You know what I think? I think what was going on and the reason why it took so long, I think they decided pretty quickly they were going to call it a goal, but they were deciding exactly how they were going to explain it and for which reason. Because theoretically, if Petrovic deflected the puck with his skate and didn't use a distinct kicking motion toward the net,
right?
I mean, that's totally legal, and you could rule it that way. But that's not what they said. They basically said, as you noted, that that Hellebuck propelled the puck or directed it into the net. It was not a deflection off his stick, but that he actually knocked it into his own goal effectively.
Yeah.
That's what they were saying. You could call it that way, but in my opinion, that's what they were discussing for all that time, more than whether they were going to call it a goal or not.
Yeah, I don't know.
We don't know that
the conversation that goes on, but they did make it very clear that one, they didn't believe it was a distinct kicking motion. Number two was they believed that Hellebuck propelled it into the net. Now, Scott Arneil had a problem with that propel statement because nowhere in the rule is the language of propelling the puck into the net part of it. But again, it's not a hard job. It's a complicated job in the situation room. But the one thing when it comes to goals, we can talk about Department of Player Safety, which is a different thing. But when it comes to goals, they just want to get that call correct. But I think it takes away from the game when it takes you 6.5 and from the time the goal was scored to the time they dropped the puck, 8 minutes to make that decision. But again, when you look at it, I agree with you that it was a certainly a goal that should have counted and did. Although, as you said, fans, media, everybody's going to have a different opinion depending on how you see it. That's the thing about these disputed goals, is that we all see it differently. And I think we all come back once we see it, once we think, like, I thought immediately, that's going to count, that should count, this is why it should count. But automatically, then after that, I'm watching everything through a bias. The National Hockey League Situation Room can't watch it with a bias. They try not to make a decision right away, and then when it comes to them, then they break it down.
Well, and of course, with social media and also with video replay that everybody now has, everybody has an opinion about it, whereas back in 1964, none of this would have ever happened.
Yeah, exactly. But here's the thing. I heard a football analyst talk about it when it was talking about replay and a referee's call in slow motion and things like that. And he goes, you know what? We don't play the game in slow motion. We don't watch the game in slow motion. We shouldn't judge the game in slow motion. And I thought, that's really good, as a matter of fact. I would agree with that 100%.
Well, now with Dallas in control of the series, obviously it's going to be a pretty important game in game number 4 between these two hockey teams, both of whom are great. Kind of interesting to note that what they showed the Stars did was that they're a really good third period team, even though the Jets kept pushing back and forth. Mikko Rantanen, who scored yet again and is on the verge of just an unbelievable playoff and a Conn Smythe season if the Stars win the Cup. Talked about the third period, how it's been a strength of the Stars since he's joined the team, and how important it is.
Yeah, it's important. You know, I think good start to the game, I would say. The first period was really good, and then kind of second was theirs for sure. They outplayed us, they outbattled us. You know, they were offense all the time, and we were defending too much. But once again, Otter makes some big saves. And yeah, third period has been good. You know, in the games that we won, we really pushed in the third and didn't sit back at all. And obviously, it's good to get you know, not only one goal lead to final minutes, you know, three goal lead, basically. So that makes it a little bit easier.
Also, you have to really admire the Stars' defense because they haven't had Haskin, and then for much of this playoff, they haven't had Jason Robertson, although he is back. Pete DeBoer talked about the pairs that he's had and how consistent they've been.
Yeah, you know what? Incredible. We were just talking in there today, you know, the fact that, we're in the situation we're in without basically those two guys. You know, Robo's back now. He's still not back to where he but he's getting closer. But without Miro, I think, you know, it's been exceptional what our group's done. And it's not just the defense core, but, you know, there's some great stories in there. You know, the Petrovic-Bischel pair, I think, has been outstanding, gotten better and better every night. You know, Harley filling in for the whole Miro left on the power play, you know, huge, huge hole. Came in and did that seamlessly. You know, the rest of our group, Cody Ceci playing the minutes he's playing, you know, in a top two pairing. You know, there's a lot of great stories in there, and the reason we're still playing where we are, especially drawing, you know, the Colorado Avalanche and now the President's Trophy winning Winnipeg Jets. So, you know, there's a lot of good stories in there.
Indeed, there are. And I'm glad he mentioned Cody Ceci there because we really love the way that he played for the Sharks this season. And I think that the fact that he was in the top two D pair for San Jose proved to Dallas that maybe they needed to pick him up for a playoff run, and he's coming through.
He's been so solid, so consistent, and you can tell that Pete DeBoer and Steve Spott just absolutely trust putting him out on the ice in whatever situation it happens to be. And he's been great. He's been really, really good for them.
So now, how do you respond to all of this? Well, if you're the Winnipeg Jets, you have to be happy that Josh Morrissey is back at least on the ice and making things happen. In that particular last game, he assisted on Nino Niederreiter's goal that tied the game and was a presence on the ice as he always is. Now he talked about how Winnipeg needs to respond better to when they get gut punched during the playoffs, because that's something that happens every game.
Yeah, I think it's, you know, an experience. Unfortunately, we've had, you know, obviously some tough breaks on the road and haven't gone the way we wanted on the road. But, you know, we're very much in a series right now. And obviously, you know, we can look at some of those moments in games where something doesn't go our way. And, you know, maybe it compounds a little bit and be better able to handle that in the future. But, like I said, we're very much in a competitive series right now. And, you know, obviously, game's massive.
But Winnipeg is 0-4 on the road in the playoffs so far. And Scott Arneil understands this is a pretty big game. But he also talked about the play on the road and on their troubles away from Winnipeg.
Well, they're going too deep. The biggest thing that you know, a great coach once told me, and I've told Art about this, is that there isn't a home or a road way to play. There's only the right way. And, you know, we have a certain style that we're accustomed to playing and how we play. Like, we've been doing it all year long. You know, this is game 93 coming up, and we got to get back to being that little team that we were, you know, for the 82 games and being better. It's this playoff has been good, but got to be more consistent. It has to be more through the season.
It's one of the mysteries of the playoffs as to why Winnipeg hasn't been a little bit better away from home.
They're allowing too many goals. I mean, it's that simple. Hellebuck's goals against average on the road is over five. Over five. And
incredible.
That's not just on Hellebuck, obviously. It's on the team and the way they're playing defense. If they just have to be better away from the puck.
Well, the next game in this series is going to be fascinating. And, of course, somebody is going to be really in command when it's over.
We continue now with the Sharks playoff report on the San Jose Sharks Audio Network.
We move on and stay in the Western Conference and talk a little bit of Edmonton and Vegas. Well, the Edmonton Oilers came up with a gigantic victory, and even bigger for Stuart Skinner, who picked up the 3-0 shutout win. Skinner in that particular game had 23 saves. And on the other side of the ice, Aiden Hill had people getting under his skin, most particularly Evander Kane. Your thoughts, Drew, on what's going on there?
Well, first off, the better team's winning. The Edmonton Oilers are playing way better. They played their best game of the playoffs last night, as the time we're recording this. They 2 years ago lost to the Vegas Golden Knights when Vegas won the Stanley Cup. Vegas bullied them. Vegas pushed them around. Vegas took all the ice, all the important ice. They won pretty much every puck battle. They did everything they wanted to do. They imposed their will. That's not happening anymore. It's switched around. And the Edmonton Oilers are faster. They're stronger. They're the ones doing the bullying. They're the ones winning the pucks. They're the ones getting in the forecheck. And also getting in front of Adin Hill. Adin Hill got off his game yesterday quickly because of all the traffic from Hyman, from Henrique, from Kane, from everybody. They were getting to that tough ice, and they were getting right literally on top of Adin Hill. And there was very little, very, very little pushback from a team that we all thought was one of the tougher teams, harder teams to play against. It's the other way around. Edmonton is the big bully this time around. One of the things, Danny, that really is interesting to me about this is that watching Connor and Leon the years we've watched them, and if things didn't go well for them during the game before, if things weren't perfect for them, if they weren't able to fly up and down the ice and get power plays and score then and have all that extra space, they would easily get frustrated. And you could knock them off their game and you could see it in their body language. It was easy because they did not hide their body language. They are hardened now. They are now playoff players. They are now guys who are veterans, young vets, who work through the crap, work through the hard playoff checking. And that leadership to me has trickled down throughout. And they're missing their best defenseman as well in Matthias Ekholm. But this is a team, the Edmonton Oilers, compared to the Vegas Golden Knights, which I thought was going to be a much closer series. The Vegas Golden Knights are being beat by a better hockey team.
Also, you have to credit Chris Knobloch, the head coach, making a couple of small lineup changes, getting guys with energy into the lineup. Kasperi Kapanen is the one that came to mind for me in that game. But also, Paul Coffey has just been rolling the defense and utilizing them quite well, not overworking too many of them. And let's talk about this, too. You mentioned it. The top players being a little bit more playoff hardened. How about the fact that Leon Draisaitl is really counted on, along with McDavid, to score points, get goals, produce assists? But he was playing a defensive role in that game, largely against Eichel's line, and did a heck of a job.
He is. There was talk early when he came in that he was always second fiddle. He was the next best guy, right? Connor was the best guy, but he was the next best guy. And I've told this story before. One of his coaches said to him one day after a game, he said, "You know, you don't have to be the second best player every night." And the light went on for Leon there. And after that, Leon imposes his will. He is very, very determined hockey player. And they've got different skill sets when it comes to Leon and Connor. But together, those skill sets help lead that team. With Connor, Connor's Connor. Flies up and down the ice. Is offensively just one of the most fierce weapons we've seen in the National Hockey League for any team. Leon's the shooter. He's the power play guy, but he's heavy to play against. He's tough to play against. And face-offs, defensive zone, he's outstanding. Absolutely outstanding.
About a minute left in the show. Let's talk about the other two series very quickly. First of all, Carolina-Washington, the Hurricanes, just a masterful performance to take a 3-1 lead in that series. To me, they're the Dallas Stars of the East. They roll four lines. They play a hard game. They get solid goaltending. And on the other side of the coin, too, an ex-Edmonton Oiler, Taylor Hall, coming up with a gigantic goal, picking up an assist and showing their depth. Alex Ovechkin scored, but Washington's a bit on the back burner here.
Yep, they really are. You've described Carolina perfectly. I'd also add in Freddie Anderson. What's his save percentage now? 9.30 or something like that?
Really great. Playoffs?
Really great. He's been terrific. You're absolutely right about Carolina, though.
Let's talk about Florida against Toronto. Maple Leafs have a pretty huge game coming up. Max Domi fined $5,000 for boarding. Everybody, of course, is remembering the suspension on the hit with Hagel against Barkov. Same player involved in earlier round. Your thoughts on that? Your thoughts on the series?
It should have been a suspension. You don't hit a guy. You don't target a guy. You see Max Domi saw him coming for, or saw the numbers from a long way away, still drilled him into the boards. The NHL said they wanted to send a message about message sending at the ends of games. Finding a guy $5,000 is ridiculous for that type of hit. I love how snarly that series is getting. And you're right, it's a very important game tonight, without a doubt, as we record this.
There's a lot of exciting hockey being played in the playoffs. We thank you for joining us for another edition of our Stanley Cup Playoff Report.
You've been listening to the Stanley Cup Playoff Report. This has been a presentation of the San Jose Sharks Audio Network.